This podcast was recorded at Hartford Street Zen Center, Isanji, in San Francisco. Please help support our temple by making a donation at hscc.org.
And listen to remember and accept. I vow to taste the truth of the Tathagata's words.
Morning.
Morning.
They're all kind of over there. I'm afraid I have a pretty frightful headache, so I'm not running on all cylinders, so I apologize. Almost a given that at some point during the session I get one of these, and better that it happened sooner rather than later. But I may have to leave you in the capable hands of our head monk for a while, so I'm sorry. Yeah, this morning, thinking about the talk, I kept hearing in my mind's ear, well, actually seeing in my mind's eye, because I'm very heavily visually oriented person, so I see one of our Japanese forebears. I don't know which one. A kind of generic Japanese Soto Zen monk, fairly young, and he's saying in heavily accented English, saying, "The most important thing is to have the correct attitude." And I kept hearing this over and over again, and I think I must have encountered that in waking life at some point, but I don't remember where, when. It's very typical modern Soto Zen teaching. You must have correct attitude. And of course, it goes back to Dogen. I don't think he uses that word particularly. He doesn't so much say you must have the correct attitude as he illustrates it over and over. In all of the countless thousands of characters that he wrote, and many, many, many talks that he gave, he's constantly going back to this point. And when he says attitude, it it's not such a great translation, because for him, attitude is a complete posture of the body-mind. So certainly growing up Catholic the way I did, and being a defenseless child in the 1950s at the mercy of certain members of the religious establishment. Actually, your report card had, you could be given a grade on your attitude, which I'm afraid my grades tended to be not so good in that department. Especially, I recall fourth grade when the nun who was teaching us took a dislike to me for reasons I'm not clear about. I think it started with the fact that I was left-handed, which was the mark of the devil in some way. But anyway, so I used to get not very good marks on gratitude. And I was also kind of playful way about me, which the nuns didn't care for. So, in that frame of reference, attitude was like something to do with how you relate to authority properly. And are you appropriately reverent when they drag the whole class over to the church for something? But that is not at all what Dogen means. When he's speaking of attitude, he is talking about the entire arrangement of the body-mind. And the perfect arrangement of the body-mind, he calls just sitting. And he makes it clear that he's not talking about cross-legged posture, although that's certainly part of it. He's talking about how we appear in the world, and if our vision or understanding has not yet convinced us of the truth of what the Buddhas and ancestors teach, he strongly urges us to have bearing as though it were crystal clear to us that the Buddhas and ancestors were teaching the truth. So, the challenge that's presented to us then is, what if the fundamental truth of our human experience and existence is, you could say, dependent co-arising? What if, in fact, the universe functioned just that way, and one beautiful reflection of that is what we call the self? And the self includes this self, that self, that self, all those selves that we see and encounter. And even the so-called self of the inanimate, the inanimate objects which we are told preach the Dharma themselves. So what if things were really that way? So I don't know about you, but when I do that kind of contemplation, I feel like being upright in my body and best I can taking care of things. And relating to other people. Without maintaining some conscious agenda about that, but letting the truth of dependent co-arising, which I would say is really inseparable from the teaching of Buddha nature or original awakening. Let that, as Dogen says, fill the body-mind. And of course, he says, when that is so, you will be on the lookout for something that's missing. And he isn't actually saying that anything is missing. He's saying that is that is an invitation to meticulous and heartfelt care of everything around us. When he says, you will know that something is missing, he's again inviting this attitude of this remarkable, ungraspable universe of dependent co-arising. Is awe-inspiring and constantly invites a non-greedy questioning mind. What is it? What is this? What is happening? Who are these beings? What are these things? Realizing that yes, the Buddhas and ancestors have told us, but they've also told us that the ongoing living answer to that question, to those questions, is our immediate responsibility. If the Buddha way is to survive, in addition to that unnamed Japanese monk, whoever he was, who was saying, most important, have a correct attitude. I was remembering one of the stories that have lodged in my mind over the years, one of the Zen stories. And I realized that I referenced this story the second time I was Shuso, like monk, at Green Gulch. And that year, I'm just now remembering, what we decided to do was, it was, I think, a relatively small practice period, but we went to San Francisco Zen Center to have our Sesshin. So we had Sesshin together, which I don't know if they've done that since or before. Anyway, it was very nice. I don't think there was a Shuso in the city, so we had our Sesshin together, and I was the Shuso, and I brought up this story. Which is about, actually I may have the names wrong, right? Allowed my discomfort to make going to fetch the Book of Serenity seem like just, that's just too much. I think I'll just lie here. But anyway, I think it was Yunnan and Dawu, his buddy. And this is a very well-known story, so you probably all heard it, but there's a significant and important teaching there. And it's good to remember, even if some people sneer at us because they think we aren't relating properly to these Zen stories, part of our correct attitude should be, you know, not letting that disturb our composure, because it's not true. You're all aware of the distinction between body-mind study of the way, as Dogen talks about it, and concentrating on a hua to, or head word, from one of these Zen stories. And not only is that a different approach to practice, but it is based on suppositions that are different from some of our suppositions. So, if someone asks you, what, have you passed any koans? I try to appreciate that the shade, the ghost of Vimalakirti is standing right next to you and encouraging you to tell that person that their question is actually wrong. That their question presupposes a way of relating to the path of the Buddhas and ancestors that not everyone shares. So, thank you very much, but I will decline the question. And then they may go off smirking and thinking, well, that person's not enlightened, ha. So, but because we have in our heart this crystalline attitude, this, the Vajra manifestation of the body-mind that Dogen invites us to have, our composure is undisturbed. Anyway, this in this story, Yunman is reading a sutra. Perfectly ordinary thing for a Buddhist to do. But you could say, well, but in Zen, you know, the really cool stuff happens outside the sutras. So, his buddy Dao Wu comes by and sees him sitting in his little room there in the monastery, and he's reading a sutra. And Dao Wu says, you should stop fooling people. And Yunman glances up from his sutra, glances back at his sutra, glances up, and Dawu is still standing there smirking at him. So he rolls up the sutra, ties its little ribbon, and he says, what time is it? And Dawu, momentarily off guard, says, oh, it's just noon. And Yunnan allows a little smile to arise, and then he says, oh, so that pattern still exists? And Dawu realizes he's made a slight misstep. So, bristles a bit and says, I don't even have nothing. A little boastful there. I don't even have nothing. And Yunman says, you're too perfect. And he says, now he's bristling even more. He says, well, how about you? And Yunman replies, awkward in 1,000 ways, ungainly in 100. This is how I go. So, in Yunman's answer, in his appropriate response is the radiance of this attitude, this arrangement of the whole body mind upright, respectful, unconcerned, alert, sensitive, attending to what's happening, listening to the, of course, the cries of the world. Even with this marvelous attitude, this quote correct unquote attitude, stumbling a bit, being ungainly and awkward, and just going on in life that way, step after step, day after day, dropping things, forgetting things, and being unconcerned. Periodically miss my teacher, whom I don't see so much anymore. As I was thinking about this story, I was remembering him saying that eventually he was very good at Oryoki practice with those bowls that we're wrestling with, you know. He was very good at it. And one day, during Sesshin, I think, in the Zendo, everything was going along just fine, and he noticed that his setsu had disappeared. He was, where did it go? And at first he thought maybe it was in his sleeve or something, because there's no way he could have dropped it. He just doesn't drop things. Right? But sure enough, it was on the floor in front of his seat. And he had to, you know, when that happens, as you know, in the Zendo, you put your hands in gassho, and you just stay like this, however long it takes, until the soku comes along, bows to you, picks up the thing, whatever it was that you dropped, walks around to the altar, bows with it, walks all the way back, bows to you, gives it to you, bows. So you just sit here like this the whole time. Everyone noticing, oh, look who dropped something. My teacher said that was a very, that was a great invitation to correct attitude. in the midst of embarrassment or whatever, just to realize that this, the Vajra mind, is no less or more present depending on circumstances. And that even as we grow perhaps more awkward and more ungainly as our years accumulate, that diamond mind, that diamond body mind, its radiance that you can't see with your eye is undimmed. And as my teacher was someone who was of whom it could be said he was too perfect. It was really good for him to drop his setsu. I shouldn't say this, and you are not, do not quote me on this, because I will deny ever having said any such thing. But when you're, if you live with your teacher, as some of you perhaps have done, you notice little things. So I noticed that if my teacher is doing a service or something, and something's a little bit off, like for instance, maybe he might, for some reason, start to stand up from the bowing mat at the wrong moment. When he notices, he gives a little sniff, sort of like, now do not quote me on this, okay? But I used to, what, oh, destroy that. We must delete this. Anyway, I began to find and continue to find that little sniff to be very endearing. And I, every time, that little sniff is like an invocation of this story of Yunnan and Daowu. Awkward and ungainly, we just go on. And that is actually how it's done. That is the correct attitude. And you could say it's most succinctly manifested in sitting, but that's just, it's a small part of our life and our time. So now we have retreat space, and once again we see how much energy and planning and continuous effort is required to have such an event. Cheryl practically, we hardly even think anymore about who's going to be the Tenzo. She just does it. And if she weren't there, well, something very different would have to happen. We'd have to have, we'd have to order out for pizza 3 times a day or something. So, very grateful to you for all your effort. And everyone's effort is what makes the container. And in that container, we simply, we polish the tile, which has no very visible, useful effect, just as polishing a tile would have no particularly useful effect. And yet doing so is responding to that invisible radiance. To approach everything that we encounter in our life as though it were polishing a tile is how to let this radiance into the world. And it is perfectly, I would say, in accord with the teachings of Shakyamuni Buddha as we have them, not to mention the teaching of many other Buddhas and ancestors. So, if even realizing our awkwardness and our ungainliness, we can allow this attitude to manifest by how we relate to each other and how we take care of things and how we eat, our feet will continue to be firmly on the way. All this funny business with those bowls and wrapping claws and special equipment for eating. Again, this is just a way of burnishing our own skill at tile polishing. What if the universe were the way that the Buddhas and ancestors teach? Would we eat in some kind of celebratory, solemn, but warm-hearted way? Yeah, I think we would. Now, using Oryoki style as a way of nourishing ourselves may not seem exactly warm-hearted, but it is designed to be. So, if we can approach eating with a certain, a heart of wonder, like, look at this wonderful bowl, and these claws which are inviting me not to eat in a kind of careless, inattentive way, and the marvelous nourishing food that is put into my bowl. This is a reflection of that correct attitude, again, as is everything we do in our practice life. So, this morning, I'm particularly feeling awkward and ungainly. And yet, I don't feel any confusion. Someone might say, boy, he doesn't even know how confused he is. Well, I suppose, but even with just a few of us here, we are maintaining the essential working of the Buddha Way. So I am grateful to all of you for your effort and for joining me in this essentially celebratory way of living. And those occasions when you feel awkward and ungainly, don't be concerned. No need for concern. And eventually, even if your mind tries to resist, your body will be convinced. Maybe it is already, I'm just saying. If you don't yet appreciate that, at some point it will be forced upon you. Because as they say, the body doesn't lie. I was trying not to ramble. I don't know if I succeeded or not. Maybe I was rambling, but if you'd like some clarification, please ask. Or if you'd like to comment, please do so. Yes.
Is there a useful distinction between right attitude and right view? Or are they roughly the same thing or different?
What I'm talking about, this correct attitude, is you could say it's an aspect of right view. Right view is based on an accurate apprehension of reality. So that's kind of what I'm talking about. If we apprehend reality correctly, how would we live? How would we look? How would we walk or stand or sit or lie down or eat? And if we haven't yet or don't think we have yet established right view in our own personal sphere, if we had, how would we live? What would we do?
And that's the attitude.
Yeah. What way of being in the world is consistent with the truth that the Buddhas and ancestors teach? Just have that question be constantly open. And I'm not suggesting that it's particularly easy, but it is the most gratifying effort I have ever encountered. I notice you have a yogi band. I wondered if you'd seen that in illustrations, because it's an old technique.
No, I just came up with it on my own because it keeps my back from hurting.
Yeah. So anyway, there is an ancient tradition. Sometimes you see a yogi seated on the ground with one knee up and the other down, and then a band around goes behind the back also. So you have rediscovered an ancient practice.
That always happens with my ideas.
Mm.
I haven't thought of before.
So you're in an old tradition. Yes.
When you said if somebody asked you if you passed any koans, I thought you were going to say passed kidney stones. But
have you passed any kidney stones? Actually, that would be a good reply. No koans, but several kidney stones.
You know those those wonderful aphorisms people post on Facebook.
Yes, wonderful.
I was one struck me the other day. Intention creates the world.
Mm-hmm.
And I was thinking how maintaining correct attitude could, in the right way, reflect that.
Yeah. Well, I think, you know, that, as aphorisms go, that's fairly good. Intention creates the world. Maybe another way is shapes the world. The world has already been created by the karma of body, speech, and mind. And our intention can shape it in a way that is beneficial to others. Was that a Buddhist who offered that aphorism? Or do we know?
The person wasn't so important as the aphorism. I think it's Abraham Lincoln.
Abraham? What? Oh. Wow. Never ceases to amaze Abraham Lincoln.
Thank you.
Yes.
Speaking of aphorisms, when you were early speaking of Dogen saying, you know, if the mind just keeps sitting, you know, and let this arise, and I'm thinking, oh, Dogen was the first one to say, fake it till you make it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. But it's important to remember that he doesn't consider that faking it. It's for real. Now, somebody else may think you're faking it. In fact, I don't remember what the occasion was. During one of Reb's little exercises, he was having us, there was a bunch of us over here at City Center. I don't remember exactly how this came up, but he was having us do little Dharma dialogues with each other. Person and I were having this little dialogue, and the person all but said that, oh, you're just faking it. And I thought, yeah, but also no, I'm not. There's an aspect of it that's fakey, but that's not his heart. And that was a long time ago. And you could say I was, you know, faking it in order to make it, or you could say I was behaving as if, but it had the unmistakable feel of practice. Even if my interaction with that person was awkward or ungainly, so it took a while for that to sink in. Okay. Apparently I wasn't going to do anything else with my life, so it's all right. Yeah.
Abbott, thank you for your talk. I was trying to think of the correct attitude with others who are annoying or violent or...
Yeah.
You know, just between the walk from here at home,
yeah.
I will encounter so many people that will bring up emotions that are very negative.
And yeah.
I don't suppose there's one right answer, but how does one keep a correct attitude?
Well, being a hate type, I definitely know what you're talking about. And relatively recently, first of all, if I'm actually proceeding with some attention and awareness, those negative responses may come up, but they're pretty weak, I noticed. And if I'm less attentive and something comes up that's much stronger, if there's like there's one particular person who I'm pretty sure has some mental trouble, whatever that means, whom I find particularly annoying. And if I encounter that person and the annoyance is strong, I noticed that I can do a little physical ceremony of softening. And I've come to think of it as softening. So the tense response, the response to try and exclude that annoying person can be met with a little ceremony of softening. Okay, let's let that tension go. And then right away the body-mind moves in a different configuration. And there isn't so much of that feeling of just, you know, more and more obscuring karma being built up. So to interrupt that karmic momentum by a little ceremony of just let's soften the body mind, let it be soft the way it is a pretty good practice. So that's something that I do anyway. And you're right, there's no one answer. The morning of day one is gone, basically. How does that happen? So I'm trying to assemble a new Doan sheet for noon service. So I'm going to go do that and leave you in David's care, if I may. And then I'll come back for noon service. And maybe you could be Doshi. Maybe you could be Jiko, or would someone else like to be Jiko? Henry, do you have to go back home? Okay, would someone else like to be Jiko for noon service? There's not a whole lot of choice, obviously, but I'm sure Tom would be happy to allow someone else to do it. If not, then you're up again, Tom. So we'll just let that work itself out. And then I thought we might chant the Jijiu Zamai this time instead of the Fukansa Zengi, which is in our sutra book. Okay. So I'll see you in a little while. Thank you very much. May your attention equally extend to every being and place with the true merit of Buddha's way.